TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Ukraine is on the brink of a nuclear catastrophe. Linda Pence Gunter and Dr. Ira Helfand. Quote, "We are in an unprecedented situation. For the first time, a war is being fought in a region where they are operating nuclear reactors. This presents an extreme risk to human life, unlike anything we have seen in previous wars." That's a statement from Beyond Nuclear on February 25, 2022. For a relatively small country, the nuclear statistics are impressive. Ukraine operates 15 reactors, ranking 7th in the world in 2020. The single largest nuclear power plant in Europe is in Ukraine. Ukraine's power sector is the 12th largest in the world in terms of installed capacity. 54 gigawatts are providing over 50% of Ukraine's electricity. Linda Pence Gunter presents a list of catastrophes that can befall a nuclear power plant, from taking direct, intentional, or accidental missile strikes, to the collapse of the grid, to operating personnel being unable or unwilling to come to work. Along with Japan, Ukraine has experienced a nuclear power plant meltdown. The Chernobyl disaster occurred in 1986. The battle to avert a greater catastrophe and contain the contamination ultimately involved over 500,000 workers and cost an estimated 18 billion rubles, crippling the Soviet economy. And like Fukushima, the site of the destroyed power plant requires permanent supervision and intervention, now and in the future. The International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War held a Zoom meeting at the end of February 22 with presentations from Linda Pence Gunter and Dr. Ira Helfand. They were alerting the world to the consequences of war damage to any of the 15 nuclear reactors, or of an intentional strike with a nuclear weapon on a major city on either side of the conflagration. Linda Pence Gunter is the international specialist at Beyond Nuclear. They educate and activate the public about the connection between nuclear power and nuclear weapons, and the need to abandon both to safeguard our future. The moderator was Dr. Olga Mironova, professor at Sechenov University, Moscow. Here is Linda Pence Gunter.
Thanks to IPPNW for inviting me and to all of you attending today. Greetings from the nuclear-free city of Tacoma Park, Maryland. So I'm going to discuss the six possible disaster scenarios and the ensuing humanitarian consequences should any of Ukraine's 15 operating reactors become embroiled in a war. And I'll also look at the risks posed by Chernobyl and the exclusion zone. First, I want to make a general observation. The presence of 15 reactors in Ukraine or any nuclear reactors anywhere automatically adds to the medical risks for the surrounding populations should something else major happen. And that something else need not be a war. We are already seeing the ravages of the climate crisis and how this can knock out essential power supplies. Nuclear power plants are already vulnerable. They are more so if caught up in a war that could cause the grid to go down. There are 15 reactors in Ukraine grouped at four sites. They are Russian VVER reactors of 1,000 megawatts each, and there's the closed Chernobyl nuclear plant in the north, which I'll talk about at the end of my presentation. So under my disaster scenario number one, none of the reactors are directly in the war zone, but the war takes out the electric grid, whether by accident or deliberate sabotage, including even through a cyber attack. If the grid goes down, the nuclear plant operators will try to shut the reactors down, But if they lose on-site power as well, should that backup power fail as it did at Fukushima, for example, things can get far more dire. So just loss of power at reactors, even far from the battle zone, could be a serious outcome of a war in Ukraine. So of most concern, given its size and location, is Zaporizhzhia. It's the largest nuclear power station in Europe with a net capacity of 5,700 megawatts. The Zaporizhzhia reactors were already vulnerable during the Crimea invasion in 2014 when a far-right Ukrainian group tried to gain entry. They are about 200 kilometers from the Donbas conflict zone. Under disaster scenario number two, the plant is embroiled in the war zone but not attacked or hit. Under these circumstances, the nuclear power plant workers may fear for their lives and the lives of their families. They would want to and should evacuate with their loved ones. But what happens if they do? The answer is they can't, or not all of them. Nuclear power plants, even under normal circumstances, are never walk away safe. Some workers would have to stay behind. If the nuclear workforce evacuates, you set in motion a cascade of meltdowns at that site, whether or not it is directly attacked. Which brings us to disaster scenario number three. What if one or more of these reactors takes an accidental hit from a bomb or missile or even just artillery fire? Then we could be talking about another Chernobyl, or actually multiple Chernobyls. A hit could destroy the reactor immediately. That's really the worst of all possible outcomes. But even if the reactor is severely damaged or disabled, then you start to lose coolant and the reactor heats up, the fuel rods are exposed, and explosive gases are created. One spark and you could see an explosion, as we did at three of the Fukushima reactors. Some of the workforce may be injured or killed or struggling to shut down the remaining reactors. And added to that, if the spent fuel pools boil and evaporate, exposing the rods, these could catch fire. And a fuel pool fire is even worse than the reactor exploding because spent fuel pools contain a far hotter radioactive infantry than the reactor itself. Those radioactive releases would be dispersed across thousands of miles. We've already had a glimpse of what that would look like for human health after Chernobyl. So here we can see the plume pathway for just radioactive cesium-137 resulting from the 1986 Chernobyl explosion. The worst affected areas were Belarus, Russia and Ukraine, but the plume extended across all of Europe. And you can see that not all the hotspots are concentrated closest to Chernobyl either. But this time it would be worse. Ukraine's 15 reactors are all much older than Chernobyl Unit 4 was in 1986. They have bigger radioactive inventories and they are all multiple reactor sites. People all across Europe would be affected. My fourth disaster scenario is a deliberate attack on the reactors, an act of sabotage to disable them, or even a cyber attack. We know nuclear sites are vulnerable to cyber attack. We've seen it before with the 2010 Stuxnet cyber attack on 15 of Iran's nuclear facilities, including the Natanz uranium enrichment plant. But would Russia really use reactors as a weapon of war, allowing them to deliberately melt down and potentially contaminate wide portions of Europe? This would seem like a scaled down exercise in mutually assured destruction, given prevailing winds would likely blow much of the radiation across Russia and Belarus. A deliberate attack on a nuclear plant would have much the same outcome as an accidental one. It would release a massive plume of radioactivity and would be a medical and humanitarian disaster of monumental and likely completely unmanageable proportions. What would that mean for human health? We should have a guide from the example of Chernobyl, but that there was, I would say, a scandalous and even heartless international effort by agencies like the IAEA with vested interests in minimizing the disaster to do just that. So we must look to independent sources to get a truer sense of the numbers. And here we must remind ourselves that with Chernobyl, we are talking about just one relatively new reactor, not the multiple ones now in Ukraine containing far more radioactivity. I would say that three of the best sources on the real health impacts are IPPNW Germany's 20 years after Chernobyl report, Ian Fairley's Torch report, and Kate Brown's book, Manual for Survival, A Chernobyl Guide to the Future. And then you just take their numbers and imagine an orders of magnitude worse situation if, let's say, one or more of the Zaporizhzhia reactors are hit, whether accidentally or deliberately, and melt down. And that's not where it ends. Looking at a specific sample of Chernobyl victims, Dr. Vladimir Vertilecki, a physician and geneticist who conducted post-Chernobyl research in Polisia, Ukraine, found birth defects and other health disturbances among not only those who were adults at the time of the Chernobyl disaster, but their children who were in utero at the time, and most disturbingly, their later offspring. So if reactors are breached during a war in Ukraine, that war, in a medical sense, will never be over. But what about the Chernobyl exclusion zone? Could it and the nuclear site itself get caught up in a war? This is scenario number five. The destroyed Chernobyl Unit 4, along with 200 metric tons of uranium, plutonium, liquid fuel, and irradiated dust, are encased in a sarcophagus completed in 2019. But that sarcophagus, which is only supposed to last for 100 years, could collapse under the vibrations of explosions in a war zone. That would loft radioactive dust into the atmosphere, causing yet another major health crisis. And there is one more huge threat to this area, as well as to any war zone involving nuclear plants, and that is fire. Disaster scenario number six. We've already seen literally hundreds of fires in the Chernobyl zone. Sadly, many started deliberately. Under ever more extreme climate conditions, wildfires will get larger and more frequent. In 2020, a forest fire that broke out within the Chernobyl zone threatened to reach the plant site. The Chernobyl Fire Department struggled a long time to contain that fire. Forest fires re-loft and redistribute radiation trapped in the soil. The 2020 fire increased radiation levels to 16 times higher than they had been previously. War clearly raises the risk of fires. And the Chernobyl zone is a tinderbox. Dr. Tim Musso and his team discovered that dead wood and leaf litter on the forest floors is not decaying properly, likely because the microbes and other organisms that drive the process of decay are reduced or gone due to their own prolonged exposure to radiation. Equally, wildfires triggered by war close to any of Ukraine's operating reactors could have dire consequences. Even under just normal reactor operating circumstances, fire is considered the bulk of the risk for a core melt. So in concluding, I'd just reiterate what I said at the beginning. War in regions where there are nuclear reactors raise the dangers to almost unimaginable heights. All of this, in my view, strengthens the argument to permanently close and dismantle the world's nuclear power plants as soon as possible. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Linda, for your brilliant presentation. And we are now having questions. And I think there are three questions to you. The first one is, why are power plants dependent on the electrical grid when they are the power source?
They generate electricity, but they don't generate it for their own facility. So they are reliant on incoming power from the grid to conduct their operations, you know, to boil water, fundamentally, you know, to split the atom to boil water, to make steam, to turn the turbine, to create electricity. They do have on-site backup power, which is what I referred to briefly. And these are often diesel generators, which is what we saw in Fukushima, for example, you know, which was not the cause of that tragedy, it was a result of it. When the earthquake happened, it disabled the off-site power, so they lost off-site power. When the tsunami hit, that took out the on-site power because the diesel generators were actually stored below grade, and so they were flooded. And so then you go to the last resort, which is battery backup, which is why you saw some of those workers rushing out into the parking lot and taking batteries out of cars. You know, that's desperation, and that didn't work. So that's the cascade of problems that happen as soon as you lose off-site power.
We also have a question from Lars Pohlmeier. Are US companies involved in the Ukraine nuclear industry or West European?
My understanding is that although the reactors they have right now, all the Russian VVER reactors, there was a contract made with Westinghouse for an AP1000 reactor, but I don't think that it has progressed very far. So at the moment, there's nothing under construction there, but there definitely are there are opportunities there for marketing American designs to other countries, including Ukraine.
And now I'm so pleased to invite Ara Helfand, who is the immediate past president of IPPNW and the co-founder and past president of Physicians for Social Responsibility. And Ara is going to talk today about the escalation to nuclear weapons.
And thank you all for attending this briefing this morning. You know, Barry and Linda have just described eloquently the catastrophic humanitarian impact that would result from a conventional war in Ukraine. But as the military exercises being carried out today involving nuclear capable forces make clear, this is fundamentally a conflict between two power blocks, Russia and NATO, which are armed with enormous numbers of nuclear weapons. And so we need to consider the possibility that this conflict could escalate to a nuclear war, as unimaginable as that is to all of us. It is quite unlikely that either side would deliberately choose to engage with nuclear weapons initially, but it is important for us to understand that both sides in this potential conflict have military policies which envision and expect the use of battlefield nuclear weapons if they are necessary to avoid a defeat in a conventional war. And so it is conceivable that a battlefield nuclear weapon could be introduced into the picture. And the problem is that once even a single battlefield nuclear weapon is used, it is impossible to predict what would happen next. But there is every reason to believe that the situation would escalate to a more widespread use of nuclear weapons. That is, in fact, what has happened in most of the tabletop war game exercises that were conducted, at least on the NATO side, during the nuclear weapons era. We have enormous difficulty imagining what nuclear war would look like. We have the images of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. These are very powerful warnings to us of the power of these weapons. But we have to understand that a modern nuclear war between the United States, NATO on the one side, Russia on the other, would be totally different than what happened at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Each of those cities was attacked with one bomb of about 15 to 20 kilotons. In a modern war, cities would be attacked with many weapons, and they would be much larger. The warheads on Russian SS-18 missiles are anywhere from 25 to 50 times more powerful than the Hiroshima bomb. The weapons carried by US Trident submarines are 30 times more powerful than the Hiroshima bomb. We don't know the exact targeting strategy of either side, but it is widely believed that major cities like Moscow or New York or Washington, London, Paris, would be targeted with 5, 10, 15, perhaps more nuclear warheads. Again, each in the range of perhaps 25 to 50 times more powerful than the Hiroshima bomb. And this is something which we have great difficulty conceiving or imagining. We have used a model historically of a single 20 megaton explosion, which happens to very accurately reflect the damage that would be done by 10 500 kiloton weapons of the sort that are on SS-18 and Trident submarine missiles. And so let me describe that to you very briefly. Within a thousandth of a second of the detonation of this weapon, a fireball would form, reaching out for 2 miles in every direction, 4 miles across. Within this area, the temperatures would reach the same level as the surface of the sun, and everything would be vaporized. Buildings, trees, people, the upper level of the earth itself would disappear. To a distance of 4 miles in every direction, the explosion would generate winds greater than 600 miles per hour. Mechanical forces of this magnitude destroy anything that human beings can build. To a distance of 6 miles in every direction, the heat would be so intense that automobiles would melt. And to a distance of 16 miles in every direction, the heat would still be so intense that everything flammable would burn. Paper, cloth, wood, plastic, it would all ignite. Hundreds of thousands of fires, which over the next half hour would coalesce into a firestorm, 32 miles across. Within this entire area, temperatures would rise to 1400 degrees Fahrenheit, 800 degrees Celsius. All of the oxygen would be consumed, and every living thing would die. In the case of a city like New York, we are talking about anywhere from 12 to 15 million people dead in a half an hour. And this level of destruction would be visited on every major city in the United States, in Russia, much of Canada, much of Europe. A study that we published in 2002 showed that if just 300 of the warheads mounted on SS-18 missiles got through to urban targets in the United States, something between 75 and 100 million people would die in the first half hour. The same level of destruction would occur in Russia from a US attack. And not only would these large numbers of people be killed instantly, but the entire infrastructure on which population depends would be destroyed. The internet, the electric grid, the food distribution system, the public health system, the banking system, all of it would be gone. And over the months that followed this initial attack, the vast majority of the surviving population in both the United States and Russia, and in much of Europe, would also die from radiation exposure, from epidemic disease, from hunger, starvation, and from exposure. But these are just the direct effects of these weapons. There's also an enormous climate impact which must be understood. A large-scale war between NATO and Russia, using all of the weapons currently deployed, could put up to 150 million tons of soot to the atmosphere, according to studies carried out over the last two decades by Brian Toon and Alan Robach and their colleagues. This would block out the sun and drop temperatures across the entire planet up to 18 degrees Fahrenheit. Within the interior regions of North America and Eurasia, it would be even colder. Temperatures would drop 45 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. We have not seen temperatures on this planet that cold since the coldest moment of the last ice age. And under these conditions, all of the ecosystems which have evolved since the end of that ice age would collapse. Food production would stop. The vast majority of the human race would starve to death. Even a much smaller nuclear war between NATO and Russia could cause severe climate disruption. As few as 400 or 500 warheads would cause enough cooling to disrupt agriculture across the globe and cause a dramatic decline in food available to people, a global famine, and an event that would kill hundreds of millions, if not billions of people, and end civilization as we know it. Now, we have to understand that as the great powers play out their game of chicken today over Ukraine, this is what is at stake. And we need to have a fundamental change in the way nations are conducting themselves. A war in Ukraine is absolutely intolerable, and we must take whatever steps we can to prevent that. But I think we have to understand that we have a limited ability to affect events in the current crisis. Events are moving too quickly, and we don't have adequate leverage. But what we can undertake and must undertake is an effort to make sure that if we are lucky enough to survive the current moment, we are never in this situation again. The nations of the world must come up with a different paradigm for relating to each other. This idea that, you know, great powers compete to see who ends up on top of the heap is just not acceptable in the modern world. It's possible one country or another may end up king of the mountain, but the mountain they sit on top may be a radioactive ash pile. We have to deal with the climate crisis. We have to prepare for the next pandemic. We have to address the ongoing problems of economic and racial inequality and injustice. And we can only do that by adopting a cooperative approach in international relationships. Most important, we need to eliminate nuclear weapons once and for all. We cannot afford to have this incredible threat hanging over all of humanity. And the good news is that is something that we can do. And we can do it relatively easily. Nuclear weapons are not a force of nature. They do not require a major restructuring of human civilization as addressing the climate crisis does. It would be a relatively simple thing if the nations of the world made the decision to eliminate their nuclear weapons, to in fact eliminate them. And that is what we must work for. I generally have approached this issue with a great amount of hope, especially since the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons was signed and entered into force in January of last year. I think at this moment, we are all having a lot of difficulty balancing the hope with the horror. But again, if we are able to get past this current moment, we must dedicate ourselves with increased energy and determination to eliminating these weapons once and for all, so that all of the human family can move forward to address the other problems that we face and provide a safe environment where our children and our grandchildren and our descendants beyond that can live and prosper. Thank you.
That was Dr. Ira Helfand of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, ICAN. Helfand also is co-founder of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He and Linda Pence-Gunter participated in a Zoom meeting on the topic of war in Eastern Europe. They met on February 19, 2022. Beyond Nuclear aims to educate and activate the public about the connections between nuclear power and nuclear weapons and the need to abandon both to safeguard our future. On February 28, 2022, Beyond Nuclear issued a letter signed by physicians who called for a ceasefire in Ukraine that would allow international peacekeepers to be sent to safeguard the country's 15 nuclear reactors. Here's some of the text, quote, "Of all the obvious dangers that come with war, one of the most far-reaching in the current Russia-Ukraine conflict has been woefully underappreciated. As physicians, we feel it is our duty to bring the imminent danger of a nuclear meltdown from a damaged Ukrainian reactor to public consciousness and urge that steps be taken by the international community to safeguard them. We also strongly condemn Putin's threat to use nuclear weapons against the West in retaliation for economic sanctions. Any use of nuclear weapons could easily lead to an all-out nuclear war, ending life on planet Earth as we know it." That was an urgent appeal for a ceasefire in Ukraine, issued by Beyond Nuclear on February 28, 2022. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.